Hello, I'm Charlie Cesera and welcome to the Coach's Voice CV Spaces podcast. Each week on a Monday at 5:30, we're joined by two highly qualified coaches live on Twitter Spaces. That's where we dissect one of the most interesting tactical points from the weekend's action, and this week we'll be discussing Pep Guardiola's philosophy and coaching positional play. This week, we're joined by the former Barnsley and Al Besiktas assistant manager Adam Murray and UEFA A licensed coach and analyst Stevie Grieve. How are you, Adam, and how is life in Turkey?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Really good. Really enjoying our time at the minute. A lot of work having to go in, but it's a fantastic club. So a real good challenge for us and one that we're looking forward to getting our teeth really stuck into.
And I'm also excited to welcome to CV Spaces UEFA A licensed coach Stevie Grieve. Thanks for speaking today, Stevie. Do you want to give us a quick summary of your kind of coaching background?
Yes, I started when I was 16. I've worked in five different countries. I was the youngest head coach in Switzerland when I was 24, then the youngest head coach in India when I was 26. And I spent 3 years in Canada. And then the last 3 years, I had 2 years at Dundee United as head of analysis. And then this season, up until about 6 weeks ago, I was head of recruitment for St Johnstone. So most of my career is in coaching, but the last couple of years have been analytics and recruitment.
Wicked, yeah. Looking forward to speaking to you about Pep, and later on maybe we can get to ask you some questions about some of your experiences. Okay, let's get stuck into today's episode. Adam, I'll start with you. We're talking about Pep Guardiola. Obviously an interesting last week for him with the Man City game in the Champions League and the disappointment there, but after Tottenham got a really good point at Anfield, Liverpool dropped points, and Man City's ruthless win yesterday, they're back in the driver's seat. But talk to me about Pep Guardiola, your thoughts on him, and how would you describe his playing style?
I think he's a coach. I think he's a coach that is so interesting, not just to watch his teams, but to kind of delve or try and delve into his brain. I think there's so many different concepts to him. It makes him a really intriguing coach to look into and to study. I think there's so many different parts to his philosophy and the way that he does play, with the standard of player that he's obviously had over the years. At times it becomes impossible to stop him. I think the biggest thing I like about him, which I think for many coaches, they will tell you that he's got a very clear playing style, but underneath that he's got a real set of raw principles, and I think that's the greatest key to his success. That I think as a coach, when you've got them principles that you believe in and you get your players to believe in, it can become an unstoppable force. So for me, I think there's a lot of detail that goes into his way of playing, but I think it's them underlying principles that makes him as great as he is.
Good stuff. And Stevie, I wanted to ask you, obviously we know he's inspired by Johan Cruyff, but and that kind of philosophy. But do you think he's evolved it and taken it on the next level in any way?
Yeah, I think when you look at kind of his body of work from early years, Barcelona was quite fluid and free within the midfield and the attack. A lot of rotations, different ways of pulling people out and creating third man runs, to when he went to Bayern and it was quite structured and rigid, but with some freedom in the final third. Whereas Man City, it's kind of evolved from like a pure 4-3-3 with some inverted fullbacks to, you could argue just now, it's almost 4-2-4 or 3-3-4 and just two fixed wingers and coming up with solutions to overload and control the midfield. So I think there has been an evolution over time, partly because of the different players he has, but partly because of the different problems he's having to solve with those different types of players. Whereas at Barcelona, I think it's, he could probably just overload the midfield, give it to Messi and he'll make something happen. He doesn't have a player like that anymore. So he's had to change. But the principles are still the same, and it's really evident about the element of control and counter-pressing, which has been there from Cruyff's philosophy all the way through to now.
Yeah, really interesting what you're saying about that. Yeah, that 4-2-4, when he's got those players high up and people penting and they can't get out. In terms of his philosophy then, Adam, what do you think the key, I mean, you could argue all the positions are key, but is there like a couple of key positions that you think make his system work so well?
I think in terms of the actual positions, I think it's that there's obviously with the former player that he uses in positional play, his wingers or his wide players, whoever he chooses to put wide in them positions are key. I think then the fullbacks obviously become vital. But I think that the main part of each player that he obviously works with and he demands his discipline. I don't think that positional play or the way that Pep wants to play, it can be done without having players that are prepared to be disciplined in the position. So I think as much as there will be individual positions that are vital to the system, I think the overall demanding of discipline in roles, in jobs, in certain situations are key for him. And I think that to play that way and to go about your business like that, if one part of the jigsaw doesn't complete its role or doesn't complete its job, that the whole thing falls down. And I think just touching on what Stevie said there, I think the progression of the philosophy from Cruyff to Pep, I think the biggest difference for me is with Cruyff, it was a real control element of the game, and it was something that looked good and it looked nice, but I think Pep's took it onto the level where he's ruthless with it. And people talk about Pep's his possession and his control of games, but I think his teams get underestimated for the amount of forward passes they play, the forward runs they have, the penetration because of the opposition they do face that they do bring into the game. So I think he's really took it onto a real cutting edge.
Yes, they showed their example of how ruthless and relentless they can be yesterday, 3-0 up, Foden coming on, chasing the ball down, getting those extra goals, which could be key in the title race. Let's go into a bit more detail about these principles then. Stevie, what would you say the main principles are when they're in possession?
To try and have a plus one in front and behind the midfield. So what I mean by that is if they're playing, say, 4-2-4, two guys in front of a midfield four where they provoke pressure and then there's somebody behind it. So there's always a way to get the ball from, say, the holding midfielder through the lines to the attacking midfielder. And I think one of the second principles is maximum width against the defensive line, so that they can stretch the opposition back four as much as they can. And then defensively, you would probably say one of the main principles is try and cover as much ground with as few players as possible. So what I mean by that is, can they reduce the passing lanes of the opponent by being as close as they need to be, but as far away as they can be, and then always apply pressure. So I think that the element of width is huge, but also the element of being able to completely overload the middle of the field, which is why the fullbacks come in and the two number eights go high, and it sometimes become 5v4 in midfield. That's so important when Cancelo inverts. So to try and create a plus one in front and behind the line and then maximum width across the opposition defence are the two starting points for me, I would say. And then from that is, how do you stop the team getting out when they lose the ball? By how compact are you when you have the ball? So can you create a structure where if you lose the ball, it's fine, you win it back within a few seconds? So if the distances between players in possession are too big and the ball is lost, then you can't really defend. There's a little bit of tactical fouling that goes on because they're so close together and it stops teams from getting out. But just those two or three things as starting points, I think, are the biggest parts.
Yeah, Fernandinho and Rodri do a good job, especially those tactical fouls. But just, Stevie, I wanted to touch on something you mentioned about kind of, I don't know if you want to call it the counter-press, but being aggressive off the ball. How do you kind of coach that in a sense of, when the opposition get it, getting close to those distances and making that space, is that something that is coached every day in training to be aggressive, or is that more of a positional thing?
I think it comes down to both. So when we're wanting to coach counter-pressing, you're effectively coaching defensive transition. So within, say, a 4v4 plus 4 possession box, you might have the four outside guys on the end lines, and that's basically your first pass in transition. If you win the ball back, if you lose the ball, you're going to have to apply instant pressure on the ball to then win it back. So it might be you've lost the ball. Can you constrict the space and get on top of it as quickly as you can and stop the ball getting to the end men? Or can you put goals in and say, right, we've got to stop the ball getting to this angle. So it might be one player cuts off the goal, one player cuts off the first pass out, and two players immediately apply pressure on the ball. And it might be that you're happy for the ball to go in one direction, but not happy for it to go in the other. So then that will inform the behaviours of the players. So I think when we're trying to coach counter-pressing, it comes from having the immediate situation of we're close enough to the ball that we can press, but also to train it in every single activity where it's, if you lose the ball, you press, you block, you screen, you cover, you get closed down, somebody else, depending on where, you know, how many players are playing, what key spaces do you want to block off? Because you're going to have players who are near the ball, around the ball, and far away from the ball. And wherever you are in relation to the ball, the teammate, the opponent, the space is going to affect the decision you make to go and counter-press and which angle that you block or which player you go and mark or if you track a runner. So I think, and Adam will probably be able to speak about this at Besiktas, but whenever you lose the ball, you can't always win it back. So it's more about where do you force it to give yourself the best chance to block up.
Good stuff. Adam, I don't know if you wanted to touch on anything in terms of principles in and out of possession.
Yeah, I think Stevie's made some great points there. And I think for us being a high-pressing team and a counter-pressing team, the biggest thing that we found over the last few years is you have to create an environment on the pitch where the counter-press just becomes a habit. So for us, that's making sure that it's a daily thing. So it's the reaction, not just physically, but mentally, to switch on as soon as there's a transition, that everybody's on the same page. It's a little bit like in terms of positional play in possession. If one person fails to be part of that structure, the whole press or the whole counter press will break down. So for us, it's more about it being a habit, and that comes through repetition of them drills, of constantly having transitions in your coaching sessions, because without transitions and you don't get their moment. So for us, it's repetition and trying to create the habits, especially with players or teams that are not used to playing that way. And it does take time to generate that. But I think it's for me with Pep and his teams, his biggest strengths out of possession are developed through him with the ball. I think the structure that he creates when they're in possession allows them to be unbelievable out of possession, because they have that many people around the area of the ball, and because they play so many small passes, when they do lose it, if the opposition fails to play out of that pressure within two passes, it's game over for them. So I think the biggest strength that Pep brings with his out of possession philosophy comes from his in possession philosophy. I think they're very good at putting teams in positions that they want them, whether they're overloading one side in possession to isolate the other. If they do lose it, they're always in a position to go and win the ball back quickly. And then with that, they obviously like to keep a really compact team out of possession and in possession, and that allows then your goalkeeper to be in a really aggressive starting position if people do manage to play over the press or the counter press. So I think what he does manage to do is he manages to control space absolutely incredibly.
Adam, you spoke about the strengths there. Is there any weaknesses? I mean, if you're setting up your team, what areas are you looking to kind of play on there? Do they have any weaknesses?
I think the biggest weakness with that, and obviously Pep has been very fortunate with the unbelievable players he's had over the years, but it takes a high quality player, not just technically and physically, but mentally. You have to be unbelievable to be able to take on the discipline that this method of play takes, because like I mentioned earlier, if one part of the system fails in terms of the discipline or the positioning, or it might be a rotation of zones, etc., if one part fails, the whole thing fails. So I think it's a style of play that demands a real football intelligence from your player. You need players that are coachable, with open mindsets, that want to be coached and that want to learn. I think if you come across a closed mindset in this style, then you're going to have a problem. I think you need players that buy into this way of playing. And then from the kind of tactical point of view, I think it's a way of playing that when you are in possession, that the players behind the ball have to be so switched on in terms of their rest defence and how the structure of that looks like, because you are you are very vulnerable to a counter-attack if you're not switched on behind the ball. So I think it's if you can perfect it, it's a style that's incredible to watch. It's a very attacking style and it can be very pleasing on the eye. But if you've not got maybe the standard of player or the intelligence of player to perfect it, it can cause you a lot of problems, because I think on transition, if your rest defence is not right, then you can concede a lot of counter-attacking opportunities, which I know over the years Guardiola spoke about, and he's put a lot of focus into making sure that his structure behind the ball is ready to stop that.
Probably saw that in his first season at Manchester City, just getting the different quality of players he needed. But good stuff. Okay, let's talk about positional play. We've touched on it a bit. I've put a link into our positional play explained, so that will give you a lot more detail. But Stevie, could you help us out? How would you describe what positional play is?
I think probably the best way of explaining it is creating a structure and a framework to give your players freedom to go and make the decisions that they want to make and make the execution of the passes or dribbles or whatever it is within the framework that allows that to be as effective as possible. So if you're setting up a structure, it's where are you standing in relation to the ball? Where are you standing in relation to the teammates, the opponent, and subsequently when the space moves? So players are not starting in one position and ending in one position. It's when the opposite side, and we see it all the time where Zinchenko or Joao Cancelo, if the ball is on the right, Cancelo inverts from the left into the centre circle. Why is he going into the centre circle? It's to offer a passing line from, say, Ruben Diaz between the striker and their right winger, because the right winger's a little bit preoccupied with maybe somebody dropping from a higher line or an attacking midfielder rotating outside, which you can see quite a lot. So I think positional plays, as a starting perspective, a framework for everybody to start their movements from and know where spaces will open and close from. And once players can understand that, I think it becomes really, really easy to get movement, because I think you watch a lot of teams just now. They start in one shape, they're still in one shape. Players will just move up, down, left or right. Whereas if you watch Man City, if you watch Guardiola's team, you probably have an element of that with Postecoglou at Celtic, De Zerbi when he was at Sassuolo, and now Shakhtar. They all follow a positional play model, but players who pop out of one space will have somebody else rotating from the blind side and take the ball. And all it is doing is constantly moving the opponent, and Pep talks about it all the time. You move the ball to move the opponent, to move the space, to open up the space, to create the passing line. So it just provides that framework that players then know that they've got freedom to play within the framework. And even though you could say it's maybe rigid, that somebody must be in the space between the right midfield and centre midfield, or the left midfield and centre midfield, you know that somebody must be occupying the outside of the opposition's fullbacks. That means your fullbacks in your team are reasonably free to go forward, to come inside, to be third centre-backs, to go and play as a number 10 like David Alaba used to do. But that freedom is created by the system, and the system then allows players to know where to move, because there's nobody in that space, I can run there. Okay, that guy's cleared that space, I can rotate out here. Well, he's left that space, I'll come in from the blind side. And players are constantly on the move because they know where they should be. And I think that to me is the beauty of it and the reason why the system is successful.
Stevie, do you think, and I don't know if this is linked with positional play, but a question I wanted to ask, obviously we saw Manchester City kind of collapse in those final minutes against Real Madrid. Is there a downside to this Pep Guardiola's style where it might be, like you mentioned, too rigid? And we spoke to Pep Linders, the Liverpool assistant manager, and he had emphasis on kind of chaos and improvisation and allowing those players to improvise. But is a possible downside to Pep's playing style not to be able to react in the big moments and be able to improvise when it's needed? Is it too rigid? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think, like, for me, the game is in three parts. You've got the attacking phase, the defensive phase, and the bit in the middle, which is transition. Liverpool basically play in transition better than anybody else in the world. Real Madrid are quite good in transition. Man City are a team where you could say are the best when the game is organised. And I think in some games when the game just becomes transitional and second balls and gaps are opening up, if the game is not organised, they do have problems. But that's you can't cover everything, and you can't, you know, you can't have extra players on the pitch to cover the spaces that you can't cover because you're away doing something else. So I think you're always going to have those problems. I think the Real Madrid one, where you lose two goals in the last minute, I don't think it's a system problem. I think it's, you know, players with adrenaline, quick decisions, stuff's going on, anxiety, the magnitude of the situation. Real Madrid have just scored. There's so many things going on that I don't ever put it down to a system thing. I think that's just humans playing competitive sport against some of the best players in the world who, in that moment, can just do what's needed to go and win a game or to get a team back in it. And I think that's probably what separates, you know, good athletes from the top level athletes, rather than that system has these weaknesses.
Good stuff. Thank you for that, Stevie. I've put another link to a tweet we've done for positional play in terms of, you might have seen it on the documentary, the Manchester City Amazon documentary, and you might see it often, but getting the pitch kind of divided up. Adam, is this something that you've used? And tell us about the benefits of kind of splitting the pitch up into these zones and helping to coach positional play.
Yeah, I think it's something that, more than anything, it's more of a, I think with positional play, especially for a coach and what you try and, the picture you try and paint to your players, is it's more of a subject, and it's more of a, it's something that to get it right, you really have to study it. And I think to have certain zones on your pitch, it allows players to have more of a visual in terms of where they need to be when there's a rotation happening, or where the coach expects them to be when a ball's in a certain area. We use it in a different way. We use it out of possession in terms of our different types of presses and where we need to be and where we want to send teams to. So I think in terms of having your pitch into different sections, however you choose to divide that, I think it's a real strong coaching tool. I think for positional play, it makes the actual message is a lot clearer, and it allows you to work in. I think the big thing with positional play, because it's so detailed, having your pitch set up in certain zones, it allows you also to work in units, whatever that unit may be. It might be your left back, your left winger, and your left number eight. I think it gives them a real visual there and helps with certain movements and rotations to perfect it. Because I do think within positional play, a yard here or there can make a big difference. I think that where Pep has probably mastered it, that his discipline and his structure in terms of his positional play in certain areas of the pitch is amazing. And then he gives them the freedom once they get into the final third to be the quality players that they are. And I think you have to do that especially with attacking players. A lot of attacking players are instinctive. And I think if you take that instinct away, and it becomes more of a thinking process in the final third, I think you do lose a lot of that creativity. And I think that the way that positional play is done, when you look at the late goals conceded, for me, I agree with Stevie, I don't think it's a formation thing. I don't think necessarily it's a tactical or a technical thing. I think the amount of thought that has to go into these games as a footballer, I do believe that at times it's a mental thing. And I think the mental tiredness and fatigue at them stages in the games, in the big games against top class players, does play a part.
Obviously, we always have coaches listening in, and this is for coaches. So we want to share some wisdom and some advice. Stevie, have you got any coaching methods or advice, or even any sessions that you'd like to suggest for coaching positional play?
I always just recommend that whatever the phase of play or whatever behaviours you want to train, you need to try and create a way where it happens without you talking. So, for example, a big part of positional play is a centre-back stepping in and playing a pass through the lines. A lot of centre-backs won't do that. A lot of them will just play left and right and go long if they have to. So one game I do quite often is I'd set up a field like maybe 50 yards long and put a small goal in the inside channel almost vertically in front of a centre back on the halfway line on both sides. And what I'll say is the only players who can score into the small goal to get 2 points is the centre back or the holding midfielder, because I want them to get in the ball and make that pass as well. But an emphasis on the centre back. If the centre back can't score into the small goal, they play into the opposition half, and then you just go to goal as normal. So what we're encouraging, firstly, is a centre-back to step in and try and be aggressive with a forward pass. The second thing that's going to happen is the opposition's winger or centre midfielder or somebody will goaltend a little bit and sit in front of the goal. That's fine. That's blocking the passing lane like we'd have in a match. But then the consequence of that is a pass opens up somewhere else. So if the winger blocks the line, it's, okay, can we go to the fullback? Can we enter the opposition half where we've maybe got positional superiority? And then if the other team win it, naturally your first pass is going to be, can we go into that goal to break the press and break the counter press? So the third consequence of it being my team's lost the ball, can we block the first exit route that they want to try and utilise? So just by making, say, a 50-yard long field, 44 yards wide, which is what the width of the box, and putting small goals where you want the centre-backs to step into and play, that's going to change the behaviour through the constraints of the game, rather than me just say, can you please just pass the ball there? I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to give them the constraint to the game, which should make it happen. And if it doesn't happen, then they're going to go into the final third as they usually would anyway. So for me, I think a lot of the advice I give to coaches is, can you just create a game where what behaviours you want to see will naturally occur through the way you've designed the activity?
No, I love that. We've partnered with Sports Session Planner. So we always get these brilliant sessions and ideas of our coaches on Twitter Spaces, but sometimes it's hard to kind of visualise that. So keep an eye out. We'll be turning what the guys are recommending into sessions so you can visually see it, and any coaches listening in can use it into their own practices. Adam, have you got any particular session or advice you'd like to share? Doesn't even have to be about positional play. Any favoured session that you like putting on?
I think for me, in terms of coaching, the biggest thing that I'd say is, as a coach, is know what you want. I think that there's a lot of, because there's so many new ideas out there and the game's moving that fast, I think as a coach, you need to understand what you want the outcome to be. You need to understand what your game model is. You need to be 100% clear in your own philosophy and believe in that, and then make the players believe in that. And then when you get out on the grass, your sessions become easy because you're always working backwards in terms of from your philosophy. You're trying to paint that on the pitch. So what I'd say to any coach is, make sure that when you create a session for whatever principle you're working on that day, put the player in a situation that he's gonna be in on a Saturday or on a Sunday or whenever the game is. It has to be real. There's no good creating a session that when the player gets in there, he's never going to be in that situation when it comes to a match day. So I think a big thing is having a big framework to work on in terms of what your bigger beliefs and the way you want to play looks like, and work backwards from that. I always find that when you've got that framework to work from, it makes your sessions a lot more enjoyable, a lot more clear. And then within that, you can be really adaptable, but still create the same repetition of messages within the philosophy. I think if you're trying to coach positional play, it can be tricky because it's a lot of detail, it's a lot of messages, and the biggest thing is a lot of repetition, which for a player can become a little bit boring. So I think when you are creating them situations on the grass for positional play, you've got to make sure that the player's engaged and it's something, a session that's enjoyable and that they can get something out of, rather than just tactical messages.
Good advice. And Adam, this might be one for the list of Q&A, but I wanted to kind of relate it to what you said. But what would you say your kind of principles are as a coach? And do they align with, obviously, you've teamed up with Valer and Ishmael now, obviously, at Barnsley, West Brom and Besiktas. So do your principles align to his?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why we probably work so well together. I think we've got a defined list of principles in and out of possession. We like a fast game. We like a high intensity with and without the ball. I think the big thing with that is finding solutions, especially with the ball, to always put the opponent under stress and create a fast game, whether that's being really penetrative with our passes, or it's having a little bit more of a controlled build up to find situations to penetrate. But then, like I said earlier, we're always creating an environment where the out of possession counter pressing, the intensity and that reaction, it becomes normal for players. So when you get it to where you want to be, everybody's on the same page and it becomes a real force.
Good stuff. Okay, we're about to do the listeners' Q&A, but before we do, I just wanted one more question. Fabrizio Romano has just tweeted about the arrival of Erling Brut Haaland to Manchester City. Stevie, how do you see Pep Guardiola coaching him and getting the best out of him in his system?
I think that there'll be times where Man City win the ball back in their own half and it's just an early pass in behind, which they've not had, I think, since the whole time Pep's been there. So it's a new threat, a new weapon that they've never really had, I think, in terms of teams that have sat in a low block on the edge of the box that they've, I wouldn't say struggled against, but sometimes you just need a big body to hold it in. They now have that. And it's like, can Haaland hold it in, roll somebody and shoot? And I don't think they've had that for a long time. So you've got a guy that brings two weapons that they don't currently have, which is a pretty scary prospect considering they're already one of the best teams in the world.
It is a scary prospect for the rest of the Premier League. So it's going to be fascinating how next season pans out. Adam, thank you for waiting so patiently. Have you got a question for any of the guys?
Hi, everyone. And it's for anyone who would like to answer. I'll just present myself. So my name is Adam David. I work at Maccabi Haifa for the past 2 years, head of performance analysis. And the role has kind of gotten into like a coach analyst. So, you know, on the pitch and then obviously off the pitch in the video stuff. So you were saying some really nice things and interesting about the positional play. And I wanted to kind of know how you kind of translate it into video. So one thing that we do is mostly kind of, you know, according to how the opposition does their defense, how we would like to kind of, you know, find the spaces, where to play, kind of giving solutions. But I've been hearing a lot about people trying to, you know, give the players problems for them to solve and less giving them solutions. And I think this kind of has a link to the positional play. So just any of your thoughts on that would be amazing to hear.
Yeah, I think like I did an analysis role with Dundee United for 2 years, and a big part of sometimes, you know, Robbie was very big on creating an overload in midfield, whether it was a winger coming in and being a number 10. Can we show them examples of when that should happen and why it should happen and the timing of the movement of it? And then can we transfer that from the training pitch? So with Mickey Mellon, there was a lot of using top-level teams as an example of how to do it. So a lot of the time we played a 3-4-3 and then dropping into a 5-4-1. So what was the first pass in transition? How could we spring runners from midfield? And then when we don't have the ball, how do we compact the space? And what teams are using that system and shape to try and then teach the players before we go into training? So there was, for me, there's a lot of easy to find videos if you just watch games and start clipping them and just take an interest in, you know, packages from different teams that you find as an inspiration for your own game model. And it's a case of, you know, what things are best going to teach the player how you want them to perform. And I think there's two parts of this. One is appreciating the skill set that they already have and emphasising what they're good at and their natural tendencies. And two, what can we add to their game? We're not trying to take things away from them, but, well, what can they already do? Like, I'm 5'4". You're not going to put me in the middle of the box and put crosses in. But if I'm in the middle of the box, you're going to have to teach me how to lose my marker or set a screen for somebody else to try and help them get some space, or do I recognise what a screen looks like to try and get round and find some space in the box? So the things that a player can already do, you're then trying to teach them how to add to their game rather than change what they do, because the behaviours that they have, I wouldn't say they're fixed, but that's kind of what they're going to go to when the pressure's on. So I think it's, you're taking parts of somebody else's game model and implementing it onto your own through video just as a teaching tool.
Okay, we've got to wrap up. There's one question I wanted to ask Adam, before we go. I'm a big fan of Gerhard Struber. What was it like working with him? And how is his kind of principles different from Vela and Ishmael's?
It was brilliant, to be fair. It was brilliant for me in terms of working with, I've been privileged to work with a lot of foreign coaches, German guys, Austrian guys. And he came to us with a reputation of he'd been at obviously Red Bull for a long time as a pressing coach. And he was very good in terms of the way he wanted to structure the press and the detail that went into it. But for me, his biggest strength was positional play. And it was something that was a little bit, it wasn't really part of the Red Bull system. It was something that he developed on his own through different coaches and research that he'd done on his own kind of thing. So when we stayed up the year with Barnsley in the Championship, for me, it was the positional play that kept us in the league, because we, even though we didn't have the greatest players in the league, we controlled games. And then you put that together with a team that had been used to pressing for the last couple of years. We had a real defined way of playing. But in terms of Gerhard, he was a very good guy to start off with, but a really, really intelligent coach.
That's it for this week's episode. But if you are a coach yourself, you may be interested in our very own coach education platform, CV Academy. Aimed at coaches at all levels of the game, it helps them develop through premium coach-focused content delivered by a growing network of elite academy and grassroots coaches. You can find loads of great content on there, including our latest coaching course with Blackburn Rovers assistant development coach, Dara Tuffy, who takes the under-18s for a series of 4 match preparation practices with pressing work. We're currently running a special offer where you can get 40% off an annual subscription to CV Academy, and that lasts until the Champions League final. All you need to do is use the promo code CHAMPIONS40 at the checkout point when signing up. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back next week with more top-level coaches analysing the biggest talking points in the elite game and sharing the best coaching practices, advice and insights. If you want to join the next CV Spaces Live, then drop us a follow on Twitter at Coach's Voice. A big thank you to our guest speakers, Adam and Stevie, and thanks to everyone who listened in.